Starting the recording. Now, I just want to introduce Sue Johnson. I'll make it very quick. She's the founding director of the International Center for Excellence in Emotionally Focused Therapy. She's a distinguished professor at Alliant University and professor emeritus at the University of Ottawa. In 2016, she was the psychologist of the year with ABA Division 43. And she's been honored by AAMFT for an outstanding contribution to the field of couple and family therapy. And she's been appointed as a member of the Order of Canada, which is the country's highest civilian honor, which I didn't know that until this morning, and that's impressive. She's written numerous books for the professional and lay audiences, and we're just going to go straight into whatever you have to present, Dr. Johnson.
Hi, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to have made it work. I hate it when I write about attachment all the time, and I have a very insecure attachment to technology, so I'm happy to be talking to you guys. What I think, I don't know if there's the ability for people to ask questions, but I thought what I'd do is I'd talk for a while, and then I'd try to make some time so that if folks wanted to ask questions, then you could be able to ask me some questions. Sometimes the question is the most interesting part of any talk. So addiction. I was thinking of giving this talk just yesterday when I had a couple come into my office. By the way, when I talk about couples, I disguise them. I change the names, but I can still give you a sense of the case. So I might talk about Chris and Roger a little bit later in the program, in the talk. The thing that strikes me about addiction is I'm basically work as a couple and family therapist. I also do individual therapy, but today I'm going to talk about addiction in terms of the couple process, how relationships, if they're negative, create risk factors that lead into addiction, and then how addictions destroy relationships so that you get a really awful, tight, self-sustaining negative cycle of negative relationships, more addiction, negative relationships that just spirals down. And what we're really trying to do when we work with a couple in couple therapy is we're trying to take care of that spiral. We're trying to interrupt it. And we're really trying to, especially in emotionally focused therapy, which is what I do, we're specifically trying to not just change that cycle I just mentioned. We're actually trying to create an antidote cycle of secure bonding conversations that create a constructive antidote to going and regulating your emotions by going and turning to a bottle or a drug. So we're really not just trying to break the cycle of negative relationships lead to addiction, turning to addiction wrecks your relationships. We're really trying to create antidote interactions where people learn in our therapy sessions how to turn to each other and create the safety, calmness, positive affect regulation, and also sense of being alive and thrilled and special that people find in addiction. So usually when I work with couples, if someone has, it's clear someone has an addiction problem, I always encourage them to have an individual counselor, to go to an addiction program. So I always do that. And the way we usually get couples is we get couples from addiction counselors. And our concern is always that the addiction is at least contained, in that one of the prerequisites for working with addictive couples is the same as every other couple we see, which is that we have to have some sense of predictability, some sense of safety in the session. So we need to know about the addiction, and we need to be in have the couple's permission to be in contact with the person who's treating the addiction per se, and we see it as a kind of integrative treatment. We believe that you get a positive thing happening where the couple sessions and the improved relationship feeds back into the individual therapy for the addiction, makes the addiction much less compelling. And, of course, the working on the addiction on an individual level also then feeds into the couple relationship. However, what I just said is nice and neat. And, of course, it doesn't always happen. The couple I saw and I'm seeing right now, who I saw just yesterday, they came in with severe relationship distress. And according to Roger, there was not an addiction problem. There was simply that he'd lost his job a couple of years ago, and because his wife, quote, was so distant and difficult and cold and incapable of empathy, he had found himself drinking more, but he was not addicted. And since his wife told him in December that she was going to leave him, he has completely stopped his binge drinking, which, according to him, would last for 2 days, and then he totally cut it off for weeks. And so he, according to him, he did not have an addiction problem. Nevertheless, I wasn't quite sure that I really believed that, but I get the couple together twice. I look at how they interact. I look at the history of their relationship, what's happened to them, how the distress happened, whether they ever had a good relationship, you know, and then I have an individual session with each person. That's part of our assessment. And to give you a feel for what happens in these kinds of cases, in the individual session, Roger basically said that he was very worried that I would despise him, that he was very worried that therapists were judging him, that his wife was judging him, and that he reserved the right to not talk about certain things. So I started to get the message that there was something he was holding back, and I had my suspicions, but he told me that he loved his wife and he'd do anything to save his relationship, and he was going to therapy for his anxiety. Then his wife comes to see me and agrees with him that she is cold right now and she is enraged and she doesn't have any empathy, but mostly it's because he's drinking secretly and she keeps catching him and she can't stand his lying. So here we have a situation where one person says they're not addicted and the other person says they are. And so then when I see the couple tomorrow morning, sometimes I see people on holidays, believe it or not, when I see the couple tomorrow morning, you know, I invited his wife to talk openly about the fact that she is indeed angry at him. He is right. But what is enraging her is actually not even the drinking, because she knows he's going through some sort of crisis in his life with being fired from his job. Agreed her individual session that she would turn and talk to him about that. So we will then have that conversation. But what I usually do here is I put the addiction, the compelling behavior to move out of the relationship into the addiction, to regulate your negative emotions and to find some kind of peace or positive emotion. I put that into the context of the relationship, into the cycle, and I map the cycle for the couple, you know, and I'll talk about how to do that in a second. I put it into the relationship, and I put the addiction into the context of attachment theory and our understanding of all the new science of love. And that's really, then we work with an addictive couple the way we do with almost any couple, if you're familiar with EFT. If you're not at all familiar, you can go and look at clips on my website, drsuejohnson.com. The easiest way into my work is through my book, Hold Me Tight, which I wrote a few years ago for the public. And there's lots and lots of material on emotionally focused therapy, and on attachment and bonding science right now. forgive me while I take a drink here. So basically, what we do is we very much subscribe to what is really written up beautifully in a book by Phil Flores. I think he calls it the attachment view of addiction. We subscribe to the idea that there is a very real sense in which addiction is an attachment disorder. The most functional, constructive, and natural way to regulate our emotions, our negative emotions, and to find a core place of peace and happiness, balance, and feeling good about ourselves is in our intimate relationships with other people. And what attachment suggests is that it is when those relationships fail us, when we feel abandoned and rejected, when we do not know how to set on a path towards reaching other people in a constructive way, that is when substances or activities, become completely compelling. That, if you like, the attachment view of addiction is that addictions are a substitute, a negative substitute for the positive connection, the positive affect regulation you can get through attachment. And it's kind of interesting because the word addiction comes from the Latin addictonem, which literally means a devoting. So I thought that was kind of a neat little thing to think about, in that attachment is about bonding and love. So we understand addiction through the lens of attachment. And then if you take that into account, you can see how we would believe that if we can help couples through cycles of disconnection, which makes them at risk for addiction, and help them move into bonding interactions, that this would be a natural antidote and allow the person to leave the negative addiction behind. I just want to say one thing about that one, though, which is that there's a lot of stuff out there these days in the culture about how love is an addiction. And I think if you're going to think about the attachment frame, you need to at least deal with that one. I think when people are talking about love as an addiction, they're really talking about infatuation. But it's also part of the whole idea of pathologizing dependency, which our society and our profession has done a pretty good job of doing that, I think. At least the general public thinks we have, because they are really ashamed of their needs for comfort, caring, support, and we see this every day in our offices. So what I usually say to people who say, well, love is just another form of addiction, is, no, you're really talking about the compelling behaviors that you feel when you first fall in love and you're infatuated with someone. But in fact, all the evidence says that that compulsion, which constricts your ability to make choices and constricts your behavioral repertoire, that compulsion dies down as you move into secure bonding. And that secure attachment does the opposite of what we see in true addictions. It expands the behavioral repertoire. It helps people explore. It expands the self. It expands our ability to learn. So I guess what I'm arguing is that it's not a useful frame to think about love itself as an addiction. So I'm going to stay with the sort of, I'm going to lapse into attachment occasionally. I can't help it. It's just what I live and breathe these days. I'm so into it. But I think I'm going to try and stay with the practical thing of what we do with couples who are fighting addictions. So let me give you a classic example. A number of years ago, I was referred a man who was addicted to poker. And he had a fair bit of a denial in the beginning, even though he, on one hand, he said he was an addict and he was playing poker all night. He was going to lose his job, actually. because he was playing poker all night. And his wife had already left him and was in the session with me. And what she basically said was that an incident had happened where she had come into his office where he was playing poker, and he said he was very good at poker and he won money, therefore it couldn't possibly be an addiction. But he was in addiction treatment for his poker playing. Anyway, basically, she had come in and said, "Help me, help me. The baby's fallen out of the high chair, and he's breathing funny. I'm not sure if he's okay." And he turned to her and said, "Not now, I'm winning." So she had picked up the kids and taken them to her mother's and left him. And that is the reason that he had gone to seek therapy and decided that just maybe this problem, this behavior was problematic. So his therapist was working with him on his depression, his anxiety, and how, to quote, "The only time that he felt competent and special was when he was winning with cards. So, and then, of course, that opens the door to you do not feel competent and special with your wife. And then we started to look at his behaviors and how over time, especially when the kids had come along, he had experienced his wife being less accessible to him. She was the only person he'd ever trusted in his life. He grew up with a very distant, neglectful family. He had begun to bond with her in a secure way, and then they had three small children very fast, and the last one had a lot of special needs. And he experienced that he'd lost her. And when he lost her, he went back to what he did as an adolescent, which he was the local genius at cards, and he was the one that took over the neighborhood and made all the money and all the other kids respected. So he went back to playing cards, and he played them all night, all weekend, and his card group, his poker group, started to mix, having prostitutes come in as well at the end of the poker session. When his wife found, as gradually their relationship got worse and worse because he was more and more distant, more and more unavailable, she became more and more withdrawn. You can just see how turning to addiction negates, you know, it's like a numbing of your need, taking your need for other people somewhere else, and then your relationships fall apart, and then you turn to the addiction more. So at this point, he came into therapy, and we talked about how that had happened in the history of the relationship. We talked about how in the relationship he felt incompetent, unsure, scared. He saw his wife as very beautiful. He saw himself as basically helpless, not knowing how to please her, never sure he was pleasing her, which is the classic sort of things that more withdrawn folks say in relationships. And he would, but in poker, he would feel competent and sure of himself. So he would turn to that more and more. And one of the tricky things we come up against is that in these relationships, the person who's basically having an affair with the addiction does not understand the impact on their partner. So we actually frame it in terms of an affair. We say, you know, you don't understand why your partner's so upset with you, but basically she's saying she's lost you. She's lost you to the addiction. She can't find you anywhere. It's like you're having an affair with the bottle, with, you know, toking up, with playing poker, with porn. You're turning away from her and you're turning to this other activity to get high, and also to relieve yourself from these negative feelings that you have. That's what you're doing. And it leaves her out. It shuts her out. So then she gets angrier or more distant. And the angrier, more distant she gets, the more you feel you have nothing and you turn back to the addiction. So we frame it in these attachment terms that people can really understand what's going on. And we use the fear of losing the relationship and the longing for connection that attachment says is wired into all of us, we use that in therapy. We talk to this man about how he's scared of actually losing his wife. And he admits he is scared, and he starts to talk to her about that fear, and he starts to talk to her about how he misses her, and he's terrified that, you know, now she will never accept him since he's gone and basically started this relationship with poker, which, by the way, when he fell in love with her, he completely gave up. That wasn't an issue in the beginning of their relationship. So we look at the negative cycle in the relationship. And the other thing about this I should say is that attachment is basically a theory of affect regulation. It's a developmental personality theory, and it's a theory of affect regulation. It basically says that we grow and thrive and learn how to regulate our emotions and find our emotional balance in our close connections with other people. And so I think that's another way where it makes sense here, that when you start to create more secure attachment in a couple, which the last study we just did, which is in the Journal of Marriage and Family Therapy just recently, shows that we can create more secure attachment in couples, not just change their relationship satisfaction. When you create that more secure connection, you are showing people how to regulate their emotion in a co-regulation process with another person. And if you think of addiction as basically being all about affect regulation, I think you can easily see how this speaks to how couple therapy can be an essential and inherent part of any treatment for addiction. Right? It just totally makes sense. And by the way, that's true of almost any mental health problem. Addiction often comes along with depression and comes along with anxiety, of course. And, you know, what we find is that you can, in our couple therapy, when people create more secure bonds, when they know how to turn to each other and help each other regulate their emotions, then, you know, they just get their emotional balance, and their depression goes down, their anxiety goes down, they're less likely to relapse into any addiction, they're more likely to be able to defeat the addiction and substitute this connection with this person who's valuable to them instead of the addiction. But we set that up very deliberately, and I'm going to talk about the whole process of treatment here. We set that up deliberately in that in the second stage of EFT, we actually ask people to learn to reach for each other and to learn to actually reach for each other when the need for the addiction, when the emotion gets difficult and the need for the addiction comes up. So the gentleman who played poker, at the end of therapy, his wife was able to tell him in therapy, I want you to turn to me. When you feel the need to go off and go on your computer and play poker for 5 hours, I want you to come and tell me. I want you to come and tell me, it's come for me again. This feeling that I'm a winner, I'm only a winner when I play my cards, when I play at cards, it's come for me again. I want you to come and tell me. And then I say to him, and what do you need then? He says, I need her to hold me. I need her to hold me and tell me I'm a winner with her. Even if I don't know what to do all the time and I make mistakes, I'm a winner with her. So we actively shape, help couples turn to each other at moments when the need to go back to the addiction comes up, when the emotions that lead to them turning on the computer for porn or reaching for that drink or wanting to go and play cards on the computer comes up. We actively suggest that they learn to turn to their partner at that point and that they practice with us in session what to ask for, how to ask for it in a way that pulls their partner towards them. So if you look at the stages of EFT, EFT begins with the first stage, which is de-escalation. De-escalation of the negative pattern of distance and disconnection. An attachment view of relationship distress suggests that it is not conflict per se that is really the core issue in distress relationships. It's not personality differences or conflict, because happy couples have conflict and personality differences. It's not the defining variable. We think of conflict as the inflammation. The inability to deal with differences is the inflammation. The virus is emotional disconnection. And here you can see addiction coming in. If I'm turning to, you know, porn every time I'm upset, or I'm upset, or I feel rejected or down, then you can really see that, you know, that's going to shut me, that shuts my wife out, that shuts me in with just this activity that's going to just take over my life and become compelling. So what we do is we look at this negative interaction pattern, where often one person is pushing for connection. The reason that Roger, my gentleman who says he's not sure he's addicted, that I saw yesterday, the reason, you know, that he's pushing for connection, he wants connection with his wife, but the reason she's so unable to turn and respond to him is because she's so angry, because she feels he's betrayed her and lied to her about the drinking. So we go in and we look at that whole cycle, and we track it. We track it, we talk about the cycle, we track the addictions part in the cycle, and we help people see the cycle from a meta perspective and understand that in that cycle, both people, even though one person might be attacking and the other person might be withdrawing, which is the kind of normal music that's going on, both people are hurting, both people are alone, both people are desperate. And basically, we help them in the session begin to step out of that cycle, see the cycle, see how it pushes her into a numbed out depression and him into addiction. And they gradually start to be able to slow that cycle down and become what we call is de-escalated, where they're able to look at their relationship from a meta perspective, see what's going on, and they start to have some ability to slow down these cycles of distance. And then we go into stage two, where we start building bonding conversations, where we help each person begin to go into their emotions. We use reflection and questions to help them order their emotions, to talk about their emotions in a way that the other person can empathize with. And we help them have what we call bonding, hold-me-tight conversations. So, for example, you know, the man who played poker can turn to his wife and talk about his incredible insecurity, that he will ever be good enough to have her as a wife, and how he's going to make mistakes, and how terrified he is of her rejection. And as he does that, she is moved and becomes more empathic to him, and she tells him, "You don't have to be perfect. I understand now much more about why you turn to playing cards. You don't have to be perfect. You just have to be able to be here with me the way you are right now. You have to be willing to look at this. You have to be willing to share. We can work this out together." So he starts to be able to reach for her in a way that helps her respond. And then, of course, she has to be able to do the same thing. And you get these incredible bonding conversations where the three elements of a secure bond, which we know from bonding theory, are accessibility, responsiveness, and engagement. Those three elements are present. When he has this conversation with her, he talks about his fears. He talks about what he needs from her, which is reassurance. To know he can go to her for reassurance. And in that conversation, there are moments where both people are accessible, responsive, and engaged. This is a natural high. I think from if you look at Hold Me Tight Conversations, this is a deeply satisfying. Our nervous systems are wired to respond to this kind of positive affect and to hold on to it. It's just part of who we are as human beings. We're bonding animals. So this is a natural high. You know, it's also a place where people can, they're flooded with oxytocin. We're going to prove that one day. We haven't done it yet. But I think we will prove it one day. I believe they're flooded with oxytocin at that point. There's all kinds of connection between them. And it's a safe haven. It's a haven where they can look at past behavior, look at their shame, look at the negative behaviors they've got caught in, and they can start to accept them. Their partner can start to accept them, and they can start to heal. So there's lots and lots and lots of things that happen in these bonding conversations. And, you know, we know that in couple therapy that the ability to have these conversations predicts really good relationship satisfaction at the end of therapy and in long-term follow-up, predicts less depression, less anxiety. Unfortunately, we've never done a study with addiction. There is one going on right now, as far as I know, in Atlanta. There is a study with a clinic on EFT and addiction, and I hope that we will learn a lot from that. But I'm aware that I'm trying to cover a lot here. I'm trying to cover EFT, attachment, and addiction in a way that makes sense. That's rather a lot. I think the essence of what I'm saying is that we, as human beings, we only have so many ways of dealing with our pain. And the most natural way for us to deal with our pain is to turn to others for support. When we cannot do that, when we have learned that that is too dangerous or too difficult or will result in even more pain, our alternatives are pretty small. Our alternatives are, and often very negative. Sometimes we find positive ways still, like maybe immersing ourselves in something that our society approves of, like sport or work. Right, I remember working with a surgeon who told me that he'd been addicted to work since he was 6 years old when he found that it was the only thing that stopped the pain of what was going on in his family was to be very good at school and impress everybody. So, you know, that's an interesting way to think about addiction. But basically what this talks about is that we don't have very many alternatives when we find that our basic need for connection with others is not going to be met. And knowing that from an attachment point of view, I guess puts me into a place where I feel what I would call a bottomless empathy for people who move into addictions as a way of trying to find some sort of emotional balance, right, precarious as it is. It puts me in the place where I can really understand their choices and how trapped they get in those choices. And there is a sense in which I see addiction in the same way that I see most other negative behaviors, which is that when we cannot get other people to respond to us in a way that makes us feel safe and whole, then what we will do, we find negative things to do to kind of substitute for that. And that's not necessarily bad, except that we hold on to them and those negative ways of being become compelling and they take us over and then they become a trap that we can't walk out of. So having said all that, I mean, I'm talking about an attachment frame on addiction. I'm talking about a humanistic experiential therapy like EFT, which believes in going in and processing emotion rather than teaching people skills or coaching people or telling them that their cognitions are inaccurate, giving them insight, for example. If you know EFT at all, and what we're into is creating corrective emotional experiences. And the corrective emotional experience in EFT is one that we believe is powerful enough to allow people and to help people not just be better in their relationships, but to heal themselves and grow as people. We know that securely attached people have a better sense of self. They have a better ability to deal with their emotions. They have a more articulate sense of self. So really what we see in relationships is that when you heal relationships, the couple, the partners in the relationship start to heal each other. And that is also a way that a good couple therapy like EFT can be an essential part of addiction treatment. So I've rabbited on here talking about how more secure bonding interactions are a solution to the kind of emotional starvation that seems to be at the root of addiction issues. And I understand that as a couple therapist, I'm coming from a very particular point of view. So maybe I could stop now, and there's maybe a little bit of time for a couple of questions if people want to ask.
Well, I am Ann Wallace, and I'm in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and thank you very much for your presentation.
You're welcome.
I was listening and thinking along the way, so what place does the substitute behavior seem to take as the connection with the beloved or the partner grows stronger? Is it all over the range of suspended and or gradually extinguished or moderated? How have you experienced that?
I'm not sure I understand your question. What is extinguished?
The coping with the disconnection that you're describing as addiction. What relationship have you observed that it has in the progress of the couple's therapy, within that relationship?
Yes. What we observe is that as the relationship gets stronger and as the relationship becomes more supportive, people feel better about themselves, more able to turn to their partner, the desire, the compulsion around the addiction is reduced. It's like if you can turn to your partner, then there is a sense in which you don't need the addiction. You know, the gentleman who the poker player, basically decided to stop playing poker and turn to his wife and turn to his family. And then they came in the last session and they made an agreement that, you know, if after a year their relationship was doing well, and if he still felt the desire to play poker, then she felt okay about it, he might decide to play poker for 2 hours on a Saturday afternoon. And that was what their agreement when they left therapy. But by the time they left therapy, he had
decided. It sounds like a period of abstinence followed by a redecision about what place that behavior might take.
Yes. I think the essential thing is I don't get so caught up in whether the behavior has completely stopped or not. I get caught up in the compulsion element, that the addictive behavior loses its power, its compelling nature. You know, it's the people have a choice. He says to her, well, you know, there's still something about playing poker I like, but, you know, I can choose to give it up because I want to be with you. And I never even knew that people could talk to each other like this. I even didn't even know that you could have these kinds of dances with people. You know, I never knew how to talk to anyone about my emotions. I never knew that you could have these conversations, and I don't want to lose this. So, if you like, choice comes in again. People are able to say, I want this relationship. I'm not going to mess it up by drinking. Or I want to be able to turn to you, not the bottle. You know, I want to be able to come to you with my fears, not go drinking. And, you know, the couple the couple also start to face that together, which is much less intimidating than facing the dragon of addiction by yourself.
I have a question, if I could. Hi, I'm Jonathan Jackson. Thank you so
Hi,
much.
Hi, Jonathan.
Hi.
Welcome.
Question about a different, I think, slightly different kind of couple interaction where one member, and in the instance I'm thinking of, it's the male, is detached. He's cool. He's there, but
yes.
He's not really participating.
Yes.
And I don't hear about the desire. I don't hear about the frustration or the fear. Right?
And the question I would have is, I would be asking that person, could you help me understand? I'm not sure. What are you wanting here? Why are you in therapy? Have you really left the relationship already and you're somehow here for some other reason? Sometimes people bring their partner into therapy to almost kind of like find the strength to say, I've left already. Or is this that he's shutting his partner out of fear?
He's the drinker. He's the one using substances, the one who's
right. Detached.
Yeah.
And so he's come to you, why? Because he doesn't want his wife to leave him.
Yes, he doesn't want the marriage to end. But apart from that, I don't see him doing very much. They came as a couple.
Right, so I would go in and I would talk about, I'd find a place to put my finger on the affect. I'd go in and I'd talk about the last very negative fight they had or the fight that made them come into therapy in the first place. And I'd go into that. It's an attachment drama. So I'd go into it and I'd say, what happened? And I'd start to track his emotions. And I'd say, could you help me? As your partner talks about this, she weeps. But you turn and you look out the window. And I start to track. I bring in a story. But, you know, as they talk about it, it becomes alive in the room. And I start to track the emotion. This is what we do in EFT. So then I might say, could you help me? Your wife is weeping and saying that if this goes on, she's going to leave. And you are very still, and your face is very still, and you are looking out the window. And could you help me? I don't understand what's happening right now. What happens to you as your wife tits and cries and says she's leaving? In other words, I want a trigger happening in the session, and then I want to see what he does with that, and I'll go with
right. It,
and I'll follow it.
Right.
So what would your client say? What would your man say?
He'd say, I don't know.
Yes, well, lots of luck
at
with
first.
That with a good EFT. Yes, right. I bet he can't keep that up if you keep going. If you say, could you help me? You don't know. Could you help me? Could you look at your wife's face? And then I'll distill her message. I think this lady's telling you she loves you, but she can't bear that you turn away and choose the bottle all the time. So she's leaving. She's telling you she's leaving. Could you help me? For most people, that would be very hard. What happens to you? And then if you're an EFT therapist, you have certain ways in. We track we set up a trigger. We track the body. We say, what happens to you in your body when you look at her face? We say, what do you say to yourself? We normalize. We say, this is very hard. Right, we say, what do you want to do right now? He might say, I want to stop talking about this.
Right.
Right, and I say, you want to stop talking. So there's something here that's kind of hard. You don't want to engage. There's something here that you just want to get away, is that right? So when she turns and says to you, I'm going to have to leave you, could you help me? It's almost like you're really good at staying still and silent and sort of shutting that feeling down, but you want it to end. There's something here that's hard. You want it to end. So we will just work his emotional reality. I always think of it like working it like clay, right? We will work with that. But it sounds to me like you've got a very numbed out client.
Right.
Who's numb
right.
And who's given up on himself and maybe given up on the relationship.
Perhaps, and it's really slow going. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes,
thank you very much.
I believe you. It's slow going.
Yeah.
I think we have time for one more. I'm not sure when I'm supposed to end.
We go till 2 o'clock or whenever you get tired, and you know, we have about 5 or 6 minutes left. So if there are further questions, let's hear them.
Oh, okay. My watch says 3 minutes to 2, but let's go. I don't mind answering questions. That's fine. Yes.
That must be Canadian time.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm happy to jump in. Thank you so much for doing this.
You're welcome.
I'm interested along the same lines of people numbing out. I'm interested in particular in obsessive compulsive people who have drinking problems that have turned off their emotions forever, it seems. So any thoughts?
Well, what we usually do is we go and we track what's going on, which is what we do in relationships, but it's what we do with dysfunctional behaviors. Like we track. For some reason, I'm thinking about a client I had years ago who, before he met his wife, he would have lots and lots of very short relationships with very young women. And then when he met his wife, he started to take all kinds of risks and started to really, as he put it, grow up. And then for various reasons I won't go into, there was a crisis in that relationship. And he went back to flirting with young women, but also going to porn sites. And first of all, you have to have the safety to talk about that openly. And it's hard for him to do because he's ashamed. But, you know, she sort of knows what's going on at this point. So you have to have the safety to have him talk about that. And then you go into what is happening for him when he feels this compulsion. What is happening for him? And nearly always, the compulsion for this man at this point in his life was some sign in the relationship that he was blowing it, that he was that he didn't know what to do, that he was incompetent, and then that would be the compulsion. So we go in and we look at that trigger, and we help him take that trigger and deal with it differently. We help him turn and talk to his wife about that trigger and all the emotions that come with it, which is sadness, shame, fear of rejection, fear of not of being a bad husband, never being good enough. And the amazing thing that happens when she gives him caring and support is, you know, he starts to be able to realize that he can go to her when these emotions get triggered, rather than go on the internet or call up his young student who he's been thinking about flirting with. So,
well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Dr. Johnson, I have a quick question. Is there a way in which the couples therapy you're doing with an addicted couple would be different significantly than the treatment you would provide for someone where the symptom was more related to depression or something? Hello, did that come through?
Yeah.
Dr. Johnson, are you there?
Dr. Johnson?
I think maybe the call is now over.
I think it's just you and I. That was a good question.
Okay.
I'm back on the call, let me say.
Oh, thanks.
thanks a lot, Mark. This is really very interesting.
Yeah, thanks. And I guess it's sort of an abrupt ending. I remind everybody, May 12th, John Kelly will be talking, and it's a really interesting topic. So hopefully we'll catch everybody then.
All right. Thank you all.
Mark, thank you as always.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.